This is a Mortarbox Media podcast. For more podcasts and to learn how we can help you create your own, visit mortarboxmedia.com.
Welcome once again to Chill Filtered, or should I say ill-filtered, because it's Adam here and I'm sick once again. But we're here to drink whiskey so you don't have to, but really, you probably should. On today's show, we're doing a comparison of two different products from Buffalo Trace. But before we get to that, let's get down to just a little bit of business. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Please hit the subscribe button, leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts app. Ratings help people find the show, reviews help us know what you like, maybe what we could do better, and all that jazz. If you want to play a bigger part in what we do here on Chill Filtered, you can go to patreon.com/chillfiltered. That's the business. Here's the podcast. Cole Sebald, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a stressful week, but I'm trying to think, I am good. The week is over, and I feel like all the stress is over. It was just I had a big presentation this week, which was like a lot to prepare for and kind of like a lot to be tested on, basically, especially as a new employee at the company I'm at. You know, it's done. I might not have done as well as I hoped, but I am done. Don't have to do it anymore. But the beauty is I get to learn a lot from how I maybe didn't do as great in certain areas. So it's kind of cool, I think. My company does a good job training, and they do a good job like making sure the training worked. And if I'm lacking in any areas of the training, they're able to build me back up. So that's pretty nice. But you know, it's stressful when you got like big tests kind of. So otherwise, right. It's getting hot out here. It's like breaking 80 typically nowadays. I finally got over being sick, but sadly, I think you've got what I didn't have or what I don't have anymore.
Did you have the flu? Because I'm pretty sure that's what I've got.
I barely ever check my temperature, which apparently is like the big tell if you have the flu or just right. The cold. But I imagine I just had the cold because it was done in 5 days. It was just done.
You know, it's interesting. I think I have the flu because my wife all week has had the real flu. Like we went to the doctor and they're like, oh yeah, this is influenza. And her biggest temperature was it was 99.6. 99.4, so really only like 0.8,
yeah,
you know, over the regular body temperature. So it's not always super important that you have a high fever or anything.
Then I might have had it, but it was gone so quick that I doubt it. But you know, I guess some go quick as well. But
right,
is she mostly over it?
No, not at all.
That's rough, dude. Yeah, I hate being
and
sick.
What sucks is like she has to go to work tomorrow.
So. Oh, because she's like out of PTO or something, or
right.
Oh, that sucks.
And I mean, even if she wasn't out of PTO, like she's already missed 5 days.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. So although, she didn't go to work at all last week.
I think we've talked about this before. When you're sick, you just soak it in and just like binge on Netflix. When I'm sick, I have to be productive. So it's like I have to like clean the dishes and do the, you know, I can't sit still.
Why? Why do you do that when you're sick? Why don't you do that when you're healthy?
I don't know. I can't sit still.
When I'm sick, I might do Netflix, but like I'll try and record. I'll try and like catch up on different podcasts that I'm doing and like work on those. But, more than anything, when I'm sick, I want junk food. Like I want, I want chocolate and candy
and whiskey
and like Pizza Hut and I mean, honestly, I'm not looking forward to drinking today.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It does not.
I mean, a few episodes ago, you told me about like how when you are sick, you just, you want to like comfort yourself and like give yourself like, you know, things like where you're like, make yourself feel better. I totally realized that last week. I was just like, all I want is whiskey and like junk food. But I guess you don't like whiskey.
I don't know. I don't know that I could do whiskey as a sick person regularly. Like I might be able, like I'm sure this will be fine today, but
yeah,
I don't know. Who knows? I just really the only symptoms I have is like I feel like I haven't woken up yet today and I've been up for 10 hours. So
oof. Yeah.
Yeah. So but, I can just feel my body kind of like dragging.
That's rough. Otherwise, you have a good week?
Yeah.
We had a good week. I did, I don't know, work was slow, and which is nice.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, my week was good. My week was boring, if I'm being honest with you, because
yeah.
Ashley's been sick every single night. So like, she claimed the living room as her quarantine space.
Uh-huh.
And that is where most of our entertainment products are.
For sure.
And so I was like going insane in the bedroom.
Yeah, I can see. I can imagine that.
You know, I have a TV in my office, and I would work on some podcast stuff and watch Netflix in there. But I have a routine, and my routine is, you know, thrown off. And so then I feel weird about that.
Yeah.
But most of all, my week was just super boring.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
How about you? Did you do anything fun this week?
I'm trying to think. Let's see. No, I actually,
let me live vicariously through you.
Yeah. Yesterday I wanted to go to a Garth Brooks concert. He was coming through.
Why did you want to subject yourself to that?
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Garth Brooks is amazing.
I got friends in low places.
Yeah, exactly. No, he is like one of the, I've seen many a concert. I think I've counted, and it's not too crazy, but I've counted like about 25 to 30 concerts that I've been to. And I think that's the best concert I've ever seen. Like, he is incredible.
You've only been to 25 or 30 concerts?
Yeah. I'm lame like
what?
That. I mean, like, I imagine you've been to more.
Probably hundreds.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even be able to begin to count.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, I usually, like,
Have you ever gone to, like, a festival?
Yeah, I guess I've been to a festival with a few people there. With a few, like...
I would
like,
count that.
As a few?
Yeah, so, like, you know, I went to, like, Cornerstone Festival a couple of years in a row.
Yeah.
And that was basically a week... It was 5 days of concerts, and you camp there, and I probably saw at least 10 shows a day.
Oh, wow.
And so I would count, you know, 5 days... That's 50 right there.
Yeah. I guess you're right. But, I mean... Still, I'm still under 50, but what I've realized is that for Heather and myself is that we kind of, what's the word? Like I need to be able to sing along at a concert. Otherwise, the biggest thing I hate about concerts is the people around me. And sometimes
what do you mean?
No, I mean like the people like making out right in front of me or the people that are like swaying as I'm trying to see the actual artist. Like those things like tick me off to the max. And when I go to a concert, even of a band that I adore, if there's a swayer in front of me or if there's like a making out couple in front of me, which happens, I would say like those kind of issues happen about half the time. It can ruin a concert for me.
You're going to the wrong concerts, man.
No, I mean, dude. And then well,
also,
the other thing
is you're being a little nitpicky. Like people swaying to the music, like that's what happens at a concert.
No,
like,
no,
who cares?
No. Not a Tool concert. Like and like this guy was the only one swaying at the Tool concert that I was at. And I'm a Tool fan. I'm not a Tool fanatic. I gotta say that every time I mention the band Tool. But I went to this concert and this dude is swaying. At a progressive rock
the only
metal
Tool
like,
that I hear about in this story is you.
No. I mean, like, and it's not only like making out and swaying, but like it's like the people that are at like I'll be at a post hardcore concert, and it's not even a hardcore concert; it's a post hardcore concert, and they're like moshing right next to me, and I'm like, dude, I came for the music. So I am that kind of guy at a concert. I am very like, I'll jam to it and I'll like rock my head, but I'm very aware of how I affect other people too. But yeah, I kind of am picky.
I don't know. I haven't had many conversations with anyone that have started talking about how they really wanted to go see Garth Brooks and ended with a complaint against people at a post-hardcore show who are moshing.
Yeah, it's different. There's a spectrum here. I mean, I have my types of music. Apparently. Like, I am very like I love country music, but I only love '90s country music. Like, I love.
Oh yeah.
I
don't know. There's some good 2000s groups, I guess, or songs from country music.
For sure. I really have a problem with like Guns or what? No, not Guns. What is it? Beers, Girls, and Trucks is what I consider nowadays country. But
no way, dude.
Yes.
No. Beers, Guns, and Trucks was
beers, girls,
90s
and trucks.
Country. That, no, yeah, whatever. I mean, that was 90s country. Yes, it was. 90s country was all about my girl left me and I'm drinking a beer.
Yeah, but that's like...
That was good country.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I'm drinking a beer because my girl left me, but I'm not like, I'm going to go to the bar and pick up girls, like, country that I hear these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I like
that song. I like that song that's like, I can't remember who does it, but it's like, what hurts the most? I think it's called
being so
What
Close.
Hurts the Most.
I think that was a...
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that like a... What's the band?
It's a trio. I can't think of the band's name, but...
Yeah, I know. Rascal Flatts, right?
Yeah, Rascal Flatts. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. No, I like that. I'm a fan of late 80s to, you know, mid 90s country. I had a mullet for years because I wanted to be Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I had...
Hey, Cole, that's enough of music. Okay, I'm interrupting you now.
No, proceed.
No, you go ahead. What did you say?
I was going to say I had short hair, but I can't think of any country artist with short hair or any artist I can think of in the mind. Billy Corgan.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay, that's enough. Cole, why don't you tell us before we go to break what we're drinking today?
Yeah, so today we're drinking actually two bottles. We are drinking Buffalo Trace, the standard Buffalo Trace you can get anywhere. And we're also drinking a barrel pick specifically from Veterans Liquor in Colorado Springs. And what these guys have told me, and you could take it as you want, but they told me it is 11-year barrel pick of the Buffalo Trace. And typically, we'll get into it later, Buffalo Trace is about 9.5 years old. So this will be a little bit different likely, but we're going to find out how different today. So Buffalo Trace and a barrel pick Buffalo Trace.
Awesome. We will drink those and get into a little bit of history right after break. All right, back from break here on Chill Filtered. And as you heard Cole say before we went to break, we are going to be drinking Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon, just the standard Buffalo Trace that you could get at any liquor store. And then we also have a Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon that is a barrel pick from, Cole, where was it from?
Veterans Liquor in Colorado Springs.
And the reason this one is special, so you claim...
Yep.
Is that it is an 11-year, and it's typically, the typical bottle is aged 10 years, is that right?
Just about 9.5, they say, is the typical.
Okay, and so this one is aged about 1.5 years longer than they normally do, and
yep.
So that's interesting. I'll let you take it away, and so here's what I'm curious about. I'm curious about what history you've got, because we've kind of talked about Buffalo Trace a lot,
yep.
But I'm also curious if you were able to figure out why this one was aged longer, so you take it away.
Yeah, if I can cover, I think, both of those. So real quick, we've talked about Buffalo Trace a few times, but I wanted to go over the main things about Buffalo Trace. It's in Frankfort, Kentucky, the distillery. They've been distilling on the property since 1775. You know, names in the whiskey, especially bourbon and rye world that you'll hear a lot. Hancock Lee, like Hancock's Reserve, Colonel Edmund Haynes Taylor, George T. Sagg, Albert Blanton, Elmer T. Lee, and even the name Harlan Wheatley, they're all from Buffalo Trace, and they're all with that like Frankfort, Kentucky property that is now known as the Buffalo Trace Distillery. Definitely the most award-winning distillery in the world. And as we've mentioned a few times, their motto is honor tradition, embrace change. So they're very much a distillery that tries to experiment, but also tries to honor those who've already done well with the bourbon tradition and the rye tradition in the past. Great distillery. If you ever get the chance to pass through Frankfort, Kentucky, highly recommend doing the tour there. Really great. If you get Freddie Johnson, who is fantastic tour guide, he's on the Kentucky Bourbon Hall of Fame. It is worth every bit of that tour, so check it out. But specifically, I wanted to talk about Single Barrel Select Program, the program they do there at Buffalo Trace, and actually Sazerac in general does this program. And some of the big names that Sazerac owns is, of course, Buffalo Trace, but also Barton 1792. That's another one they own, and they also do this program with it. And another one is the A. Smith Bowman company, or like the distilling group in Spotsylvania, what is it, Virginia, the land of my once people.
That's right.
And you can, so with this program, the Single Barrel Select program, you can either visit the distillery or you can have their Buffalo Trace master distiller, Harlan Wheatley. He will pick a barrel for you based on kind of the things you're looking for in a bourbon. You can get between 180 and 240 bottles out of your one barrel. And that's really dependent on how much evaporation loss has occurred. You know, like certain barrels will be like 50% full. And so you can only get so much
because
out of it.
Because of the angel's share.
Exactly, exactly. And that little bit of evaporation through the pores of the wood.
It's a little teaser at Whiskey World News today, by the way.
Ooh, I'm excited. That'd be cool. You get a little customized stamp on the side of your bottle. It's a typically with Buffalo Trace, it is a like a copperish stamp, and it'll typically have your logo on it if you decide to put your logo as like a liquor store or a group, like a I've seen some, what do you call them, like bourbon clubs do it as a group. You might be wondering how much it costs. You actually get the barrel as well, like the actual like wooden barrel. But it costs typically between $4,000 and $15,000, depending on the bottle or like the type of stuff. You know, like there's a lot that can go into it. But for Buffalo Trace, you can do this for the actual Buffalo Trace bottle. As we're doing today, you can get it for Weller Reserve and Weller Antique, Blanton's or Eagle Rare. Those are all options you can get a barrel pick for. Some are going to be more expensive than others, like Blanton's for sure, or Weller. But they're available, which is kind of cool. Those of you who are interested, I am not paid by any of this like program or the distilleries, but check it out at singlebarrelselect.com. And you can actually do it yourself as long as you go through certain distributors. It's totally legal. You can get your own barrel. It's pretty amazing.
We kind of talked about that one time.
And we did.
I could have sworn that I have read that you can't as an individual do it.
Oh, really? Well, I've definitely seen like bourbon clubs do it or like whiskey clubs do it. So
do those clubs like have a bar that they do it through or a
Like a distributor?
A liquor store that they do it through?
They might, because I did see on the singlebarrelselect.com like website that you have to do it through like a bottle like distributor. So, right. But that's not too hard to do. You know, you pay the right people, you know, like actually legitimate legal fees of, you know, distributing through them.
Right.
And then I think that's how you do it, but you can't just do it right through the distillery, but you have to go through like... In the case of Madison, there was like Frank Distiller or distributor, and there was like GenBev and stuff like that. But I think you can go through them.
Okay.
And then they'll usually ahead of time they'll give you like multiple barrel samples like to choose from. And I don't know if I fully mentioned this; it's kind of self-explanatory. But this is like one barrel. Like you don't mix barrels. You don't get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You get one barrel, and all the bottles are single barrel in that case. So. Typically, Buffalo Trace is not a single barrel product, but the one with that we're drinking today, that is the barrel pick, is a single barrel product. So,
all right.
So, just really quick about Buffalo Trace. I mentioned earlier it's about 9.5 years old, but there is actually no age statement. But Buffalo Trace Distillery claims it's at least 8 years old. It is mash bill number one, same mash bill used for Stag and Eagle Rare. Which is a low rye bourbon mash bill. They say it's about 10% or less rye. MSRP between $22 and $30 retail. And then for the value, and this is my opinion right here, for the value, I think this could be one of the greatest bourbons out there. And it's becoming, sadly, a lot harder to find these days. But that's all I got.
Really?
I can barely find it in Arizona these days. Like I have to get lucky to find it.
Wow. Yeah. I got mine at Costco yesterday and it was super Ooh. Cheap and they had just pallets of it. So
really? How much was it at Costco? Do you remember?
Like $20.
Oh, that's good to know. Dude, they kill it with that price. It's just so good for how cheap it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, it's kind of replaced like what are the Jack Daniels for me? If I'm mixing, I'm probably mixing Buffalo Trace.
I mean, when the price is only that different, like Jack Daniels is like 18 or 15 or 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally worth a little bit of upgrade in price.
One thing you didn't touch on, and you might not know this, is why this one is aged longer.
Yeah, so what happens basically with barrel picks is some of the barrels are... So some will go above age, some will go below age of like the standard actual Buffalo Trace in this case. Sometimes they'll set it aside and say, this won't make our batch, like for our regular Buffalo Trace. So we'll just keep it aging in the barrel and we'll do a single barrel program for this specific barrel. So what I know is that these specific barrels might be what really went into the whole batch for Buffalo Trace, but they might have been ones they set aside and said, this is too different from what we're aiming for with Buffalo Trace, because they are the master distillers aiming for a taste in general. Maybe it went too far in one direction with the oakiness or something like that, but that's probably the case with this 11-year one, is they set it aside and for an extra year or so, and then the Veterans Liquor Store in Colorado picked it up from there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder, I was just thinking, I guess they're probably pretty smart. They have to be when they send out the samples to stores to choose the barrel that they're going to do from, you know, they might send out 3 samples and have them pick from that.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine they don't send out those same samples from the same barrels to other liquor stores at the same time, because
two
pick the same thing.
Yeah, I would imagine they have to round through them and make sure you don't choose that one before you introduce it to someone else.
Right. All right, well, let's drink.
I'm popping the, you know, it doesn't matter which one first, but, oh, that didn't make much of a
sound. Well, it does. I feel like we need to...
You want to drink standard first?
Yeah, you whatever you want to do, but we've got to drink both of the same one at the same time.
Yeah, let's do the standard one first.
Okay.
Here goes the second pop. You really didn't hear the first one, but here's the second. Oh, man, that's tight.
Well, oh, hey there.
Oh, that was one of my favorites.
It is definitely more of a pop than it is a plunk.
Yo, this one, the standard one, has a fake cork. I don't know if the first one I had a fake cork. Like a synthetic one.
Yours has a synthetic one?
My standard bottle.
Oh, yeah, mine does too. Yeah, mine does too.
I don't think my other bottle did, though.
Why don't you complain about it some more?
No, my other one's a real cork. That's cool. I guess they're switching over. They learned from that one article we read recently.
Right.
All right, pouring that.
All right, so here's the standard. I'm going to start smelling.
Please.
This is one of the first... Did you overfill? What happened?
No, I was trying to put the synthetic cork back on and it was not working. But we're good. Go on.
Did you spill?
No, luckily. I did not.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so tasty smelling.
This is one of a handful of whiskeys that we've done that I've drank a lot of, and so it's not anything new to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Although I've never had the standard because I've only ever had a barrel pick of it.
That is true, yeah. And the barrel pick was from Steve's in Madison.
Yeah.
So this is apple-y.
Yes, very.
Caramely, but not as much as it is apple-y. I'm not getting a lot of vanilla off the nose, but definitely fresh apples to me.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. Yeah. So
got a little bit of chocolate, if I'm being honest.
Oh, really? Yeah. For those listeners out there, I am comparing the colors of the bottles. I do not see a difference in color, which might not mean anything because they're both 90 proof. So they were both cut. So with water. Yeah. You taking a sip, Adam? So while you sip, I imagine.
I have sipped, yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to sip now.
It's more burny than I remember it being. Got more burn to it, I should say.
Feel the burn.
But really good. Really, really, I don't know, rich. It's very rich.
Yeah. It is. I some bourbons I taste, I think, you know, it has this little hint in left or right, whatever area it is. It's a little unpleasant in this or that way, whatever it is. This is completely pleasant.
Of what?
You know, like random bottle, you know, like it was like, right, this one's right, too oaky or something. This is just pleasant so much. I mean, it's not like screaming like I'm the best thing you ever drank, but it is so pleasant in every way, but it's not like blowing my mind, but it is so good. Caramel, vanilla.
Yeah, it is very good.
I'm going to leave a
it's
little
bit.
It's
got a nice...
Yeah?
Go ahead. What?
I'm just going to leave a little bit if I once I get to the second one, so I can go back and forth.
Well, are we going to put a drop of water in these?
We might as well. I might just pour a little more later. But yeah, I'll take a little water drop.
Well, here's my question is, do we switch first? Do we try the other one?
I think we should.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. So I'm going to start sniffing the barrel pick.
Sure. I took a drink of beer to kind of wash any flavor out of my mouth.
Yeah, I'll take a sip of this water I got. So the nose is slightly different, actually.
Yes. Yes, it is. You are correct.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how different it was, actually.
It's more alcohol-y. Astringent might be a small word I want to use. Not a small word, but it is slightly astringent.
What does that word mean?
So, like, what I see is, like, it's hard to describe, but, like almost, like, when I think of astringent, I think of, like, almost bitter from the oak or something like that. Like, maybe I'm using the total wrong word, but caramel shows up more on this nose. Go ahead.
Here's what I'm getting. I have now sniffed them both side by side.
Yeah.
The first one, when I sniffed and drank it, I would use that word deep or rich to describe it.
Yeah.
The second one feels much lighter.
Really?
To me.
Just on the nose.
It smells lighter. Yeah, so far I haven't sipped it.
I'm getting...
But on the nose, it seems almost more watery, if I'm honest.
Yeah. I'm getting a lot more caramely. I'm getting the more soft caramel, like chewy caramel, on the non barrel pick, and on the barrel pick, I'm getting oakiness, and it's kind of muted in comparison to the first one. I'm not getting that appley. I'm getting a little appley, but a very different.
I'm getting some BO on the barrel pick.
I'm getting a little chocolate, like almost like a chocolate-covered apple or something.
Have you ever had a chocolate-covered apple?
Or like slices. You ever had slices that were chocolate-covered?
No.
Oh, man, you're missing out.
Well, I'm going for a sip.
Yeah, go for it. So, yeah, the big things I'm getting off the nose are... I mean, the cool thing is they're very different. We're already proving that there might be an age difference here. There's definitely a difference between a barrel pick and a... standard bottle.
The taste is completely different.
Really? Okay, I'm going
completely
for it.
Different. It's got some of that metallic-y tinniness a little bit to it, mm-hmm. that I like, almost like a, you know, putting a 9-volt battery on your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Really sharp apple taste. Almost no caramel, and I was right. It, as with the nose, it's much lighter. It's much. Yeah. It's not as rich as the standard is.
So, I think you can tell it's more oaky.
Yes.
Still pleasant to me. Sometimes oak can overdo it, but it's still good. So far, I prefer this one. It's got a little more, in my opinion, it's got more depth to it. A little more complex. There's a few more things going on in this one. I love both their level of vanilla and caramel. But the oak shows up a little more in this one, but it's got more going on.
It's interesting. I don't think it's more complex at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually a much simpler taste. It's much, the other one I could sit there and pick out flavors for a long time. This one, it's just so strongly apple and that tinny metallic taste. And like those are the two main things. There's not a lot of, to me, not a lot of depth to this one.
Yeah. I just tried the first one right after sipping the barrel pick. They're different. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I part of this episode, I really wanted to say, is there really a difference between a barrel pick and a typical bottle? Yes is my answer.
I would I would agree. So I dropped some water, and I'm going to start smelling the standard again.
Yeah. I'm dropping water right now. And
ooh, it's much more... with that water in it, that standard one, I would say it's very chocolatey on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, with my water, it's a little bit like that as well.
I like it. It almost smells like a chocolate covered caramel. That you'd get out of like a box of chocolates.
So the nose on the barrel pick didn't improve. It's very alcohol smell to me right now. I think that's the oak speaking. Of just like really stronger oak, especially when we add water, at least in mine.
The nose on the barrel pick for me with water added has changed to very cinnamony.
Oh, let me see that. A little bit. For me, at least. Definitely not like some of the ryes we've recently had.
I'm going to taste this.
Yeah, go for it. On the nose, yeah, it's not more pleasant for the barrel pick for me when I added water. Yeah, it's we'll see how it tastes in a second, but I don't know what you think, Adam. Any
the standard with that water in it has become much more like what the barrel pick was straight. It does not seem as rich. You know, it's obviously thinned out by the water.
This is
but it's still good.
I prefer the standard bottle when it comes to the water. Oh, but the finish on barrel pick is doing me good.
Wait a second. You prefer the standard over what?
With water, I prefer the standard over the barrel pick.
Really? You've tasted both already?
Yeah.
With water in it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're jumping the gun here, man.
Oh, my B. Oh, so you're going like one step at a time. I gotcha. I am going to re-pour a tiny bit with the standard because I'm out of it and I want to see what it's like with ice. Glug, glug. Let's see if I can get this cork in.
I think we are completely opposite on this.
I think so.
Because I think that 11-year barrel pick with the water in it, it's the best I've had so far.
Really? I'm adding ice.
Out of the four tastes I've had.
Huh. It's different. I mean, I'm excited that it's different because I'm glad I have literally two separate bottles of the same brand on my shelf now.
Right.
I'm interested in like what you think. You could tell us later on a future episode what you think of this, of your barrel pick from Steve's versus... The standard bottle you have.
I probably have an ounce of that left.
Yo.
Of that Steve's barrel pick.
I hate to say it, but Buffalo Trace standard bottle with ice was just so good.
Well, are you going to try the barrel pick with ice?
Yeah, I just poured a little, but I just, my first sip was from the standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. I did not expect it to be that good. I don't think I've ever tried Buffalo Trace with ice.
Really?
Yeah. Here comes barrel pick with ice. Let's see. This is going to be huge, I think. Difference.
Well, while Cole is drinking, I have nothing to say.
You so have hurry up. A word from our sponsors. No.
Yeah, we don't have sponsors.
Sponsors listening, sponsor us. Let's see. Buffalo Trace Standard wins this battle, in my opinion.
Wow, I'm surprised.
More caramely, more vanilla-y. The oak stands out with the, and not in a, you know, like I said, not in an unpleasant way the oak is for the barrel pick. But I think I can tell that it's a little more aged, for sure.
Well, my heart is broken. So the all-important time has come. What are we saying as far as a rating goes for these two?
That's hard because they're both good in their own way.
So let's just the standard. What are you going to rate the standard?
I put the standard in 8 range, 8.55.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the standard at 6.5.
Okay.
And so what did you do the barrel pick, 11-year barrel pick?
I put the barrel pick at an 8.3.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I put that at a 7.8.
Nice. That's a big difference.
So your lowest score was higher than my highest score.
Yeah, but we grade different, as our listeners
might
know.
That is true.
Yeah.
So, but I enjoyed it. I really like that that 11-year. I'm surprised you didn't like it as much as I do.
Yeah. No, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. But I
understand.
As much as
it
you
just,
do.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, I think it's really good. Even though you gave it a higher score than I did.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, anything else about these whiskeys before we get to Whiskey World News?
I highly recommend listeners picking up a barrel pick and kind of finding out for yourself, but nothing more I got.
Yeah. Again, expect to pay anywhere between $22 to about $30 for this. Maybe a little more if it's a barrel pick. I'm not sure. I've never bought a barrel pick myself, but it's good. And Cole, do you have any idea what we're drinking next week? Are we doing the experimental?
Yeah, let's do the experimental. That specifically is the Buffalo Trace experimental bottle, 2015, 125 entry proof sour mash bourbon.
Perfect. All right. Now it's time for Whiskey World News. All right, it's time for Whiskey World News, and this is the point of Chill Filtered, where I go and find an article on the internet that's about whiskey, and I read it, I tell you what website it's on, who wrote it, and the title, and all that stuff. So this article is from wearethemighty.com. I think that it may be a military-based website. I'm not sure.
Huh.
I think it's a very patriotic America-first website that I don't necessarily, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of, but whatever.
Sounds like a punk emo band.
We Are the Mighty. Yeah, you're right. It does. Yeah. So it's wearethemighty.com, and it's written by, the name is J-U, so Jew Shardlow and Charlie Floyd. Again, it's wearethemighty.com, written by Jew Shardlow and Charlie Floyd. And the title is, What Makes a Bottle of Whiskey Cost $1.5 million?
Huh.
Glenfiddich Distillery in Scotland is the world's largest exporter of single malt whiskey. Started in Dufftown in 1886, it ships 1.2 million 9-liter cases each year. And by the way, listeners, I read this article already. It ends in a really weird way. And it's also very short. Anyway, making single malt is a difficult and lengthy process. Barley is ground down and added to spring water. Heated to 64 degrees Celsius, it turns to sugar, dissolving into a fine, sweet, tangy liquid called wort. The wort is drained, cooled, and passed into washbacks. This is heated and condensed in copper wash stills for its first distillation, and a second time in spirit stills. This spirit trickles into the spirit safe, ready for maturation, and then is batched in casks with spring water. Casks spend years in the warehouse maturing into a single malt. An aged 30-year maturation can have 30 to 40% of the alcohol evaporated in the barrel, or over 1% each year of the whiskey's life. This is because of, quote, angel's share, the natural evaporation of the liquid into the atmosphere over time. So, older whiskeys are expensive not because they are old, but because they are rare. Fashion and the collector's market also have something to do with the rise in popularity. Christie's director of wine, Tim Tiptree, oversaw the sale in 2018 of the Macallan 1926 60-year-old, which sold for $1,512,000 to a private buyer. According to Tim, the collector's market will continue to grow, India, China, and Japan are now main players in the single malt market. Particularly successful is the Yamazaki Distillery in Osaka Prefecture. Rare whiskies from their collection of single malts now sell for thousands of dollars. We tried a 12-year-old single malt worth $36 and the 50-year-old bottle worth $30,000. And that's how it ends. It ends with like a weird brag. Yeah. Like, it ends with like a brag, and then they don't go on to give any notes like, on the stuff they tried.
Oh,
they're
wow.
just like, we tried a 12-year-old and a 50-year-old. Bye.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't get why it ended that way.
Because it's a punk band.
Right. The reason I like this article is because, you know, we've talked about bottles selling for a lot of money at auction, and we've talked about the angel share and things like that, the evaporation. And I just think, I guess I've never thought that, you know, the reason these old bottles are selling for a lot of money isn't necessarily because they're old. It's because there's not a lot of juice left in the barrels. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. For example, one of the cool things you'll see if you read, so every year, for example, Buffalo Trace for their antique collection puts out specific notes on every of the five bottles in the antique collection.
Right.
One of the cool things when I believe it was like 2015 or 16, and they might, it very well is likely mentioned in multiple years worth, but for George T. Stagg, they have that. Usually it's at least, I believe, what was Stagg, like 12 years, I believe. But they put it on the top racks of the rickhouse, and when it's at the top, that's the most heat, and especially in the summers of the Kentucky summers, basically. Right. And the more heat, the more evaporation. But they said they would pull certain barrels down the line and open them to, you know, spill out whatever's good stuff is inside. And they said sometimes they would be dry, like bone dry on the inside, like completely evaporated out.
That's crazy.
And sometimes, and the cool thing is they actually describe exactly how many, like how much evaporation loss there was per year of, like, for example, George T. Stagg. Sometimes they'll say like 18% was left. Like, so like 72% evaporate, or no, 82% evaporation loss that year. It's just crazy what can really go into it. And I think when you think of like, the economics of whiskey, it's like, you know, your supply goes down over time, and for the years, I mean, there's so much that goes into it. Like, you, the more you have this bottle, the less of it there actually is, and the longer it's been held, two things happen, is that, yeah, like, supply goes down, but demand still goes up, because people still want that really old bourbon, or whatever it is. If it's a scotch, the same applies. So that just extremely just spikes up the price when it's becoming more of a collector's item, because it's rare, but also it's like this investment altogether of like this old bottle. So I think it's kind of cool, the science behind it and like the economics behind it as well.
Yeah. I'll probably never be able to afford a bottle that costs thousands of dollars. You know, on Reddit, people have started getting that Double Eagle Very Rare.
Oh, I can't believe people are
showing
on
pictures
that.
Of it. And there's been a few posts of people who get the box. They go to the liquor store, they get the box, and they buckle it up in their car for the ride home. Like, actually put the seatbelt over it.
Oh, I totally would. I would not hesitate to protect that thing with my life.
Yeah, you know, I read a comment recently about the product, and they said, you know, all of the marketing so far has either showed a lot about the box and a lot about the bottle, but not much about the actual liquid. And the person said, so basically you're spending $2,000 for bragging rights. And I kind of was like, yeah, that kind of it's probably pretty correct. There's probably not that huge of a difference. I wouldn't think between this and the normal stuff. So
yeah, especially, but I mean, like, yeah, I mean, if you compare it to the like the 17-year versus the 20-year,
right?
I don't know how much different it would be. I think I would probably prefer the 17 to the 20-year. I think 20 years is a lot of time to keep in a barrel.
Yeah,
but it is totally bragging rights. When you throw down $2,000 for a bottle, you are not keeping that thing to yourself. I can assure you of that.
You mean as far as the liquid, or as far?
No, in terms of like you're showing off every time you're drinking right. that bottle. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you invite your friends over to look at you while you do it.
Yeah. You know, we talk all the time that it's important to share your good whiskey with people. I don't think I would be sharing that one.
Here's my thing is that I have some antique collection bottles. I have certain bottles that are worth over $1,000 if they were sealed and closed, but I rarely drink that stuff on my own, but I won't share it with your average person. I will only share it with, you know, people that very much can appreciate what they're drinking. If they're just going to shoot it, we're not sharing.
You got to be like me and have a profiling whiskey where you give a great whiskey to somebody. And if they're like, this is great. This is so good. Then you'd be like, oh, okay, that you can keep drinking that then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so like we said, next week we're going to be drinking another Buffalo Trace product. It's the Buffalo Trace Experimental from 2015. Listeners, you probably can't find it anywhere, but you should still go buy yourself a good bottle of something, pour a glass with us next week, and drink with us as we drink that. Cole, do you got anything else to say?
One quick thing. So Heather and I were hoping to go to Europe in the fall, and in London there's this one bar that has like certain whiskeys that are beyond rare. Like they have a pour, like I was blown away. They have pours that were bottled in like the 1920s. Wow. And they have every Buffalo Trace experimental bottle that's ever been put out. They still have it on the shelf. Like these kind of things. So I'm excited about maybe one day at least looking at their selection. I probably can't buy their pours, which are over $200 sometimes a pour. Or 200 pounds a pour, which is still like closer to $300, really. But anyway, I saw that the other day. I was like, dang, I've never seen a bar like that before. But I just had to mention that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Maybe once you go and get some good stuff, you'll have some good stories. You'll have to bring your microphone stuff, your recorder with you and try and talk to somebody there. That's
a good idea.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope that happens, Cole. And listeners, as always, I hope that our love of spirits lifted yours.